Antibiotic resistance sickens more than 2 million people in the United States, and it causes 23,000 deaths each year. We now know that the overuse of antibiotics in livestock, feeding animals antibiotics in their food and water, plays a role in the growth and spread of antibiotic-resistant bacteria. And Time magazine senior editor Brian Walsh joins us now to look at whether the Food and Drug Administration has been doing enough to protect our health. His recent article is, "New Report Says FDA Allowed High-Risk Antibiotics to be Used on Farm Animals." Hello and welcome to our show. Welcome back.
Thanks, Leonard. Yes.
When did the practice of putting antibiotics in animal feed begin?
That's actually been going on since about the 1950s, and there's been an increase going on as we've produced more and more meat. Now, some of the antibiotics is used, of course, to treat sick animals just as we would use them to treat sick people, but the vast majority of those antibiotics are given actually to help promote growth, to help animals grow faster, and therefore you need to feed them less, and it's cheaper to produce them, and also sort of just what's known as preventative use, sort of to try to keep them healthy in conditions in factory farms that can often be, not very conducive to health, very, very tightly packed. And if you give them those drugs, hopefully it keeps them getting sick.
And should I assume that most of the meat that we see, unless it's labeled differently, is from animals that have been given antibiotics?
That's a pretty good chance. I mean, unless you get something that actually says antibiotic-free, chances are that antibiotics will be involved somewhere along the lines. And virtually all, conventional meats, your fast food meat for the most part, that's definitely going to be having some antibiotics.
Are prescriptions involved? Are veterinarians involved?
Veterinarians are involved, but, I mean, you're essentially allowed under current rules to use these drugs pretty widely. I mean, I think it's actually very hard to get precise numbers, but the FDA doesn't really track very closely exactly which drugs are used and exactly how they're used. But there's sort of a sense that about 70% or so of antibiotics by weight do go to animals. And, farmers are generally relatively free to use them for any of those options. I mean, if you're talking about something like growth promotion, using low doses, you're using them fairly steadily. And it's those very low doses, actually, that seem to cause this problem of antibiotic resistance.
Are these the same kinds of antibiotics that are given to humans?
Yeah, I mean, they're from the same class. I mean, drugs you may have heard of, like penicillins or tetracycline. These are also the same kind of antibiotics that you might be prescribed for a basic infection. These are also the same kind of classes that are going to be used on animals as well.
Now, when they first started being used, were there any concerns raised that this might not be the best way to promote public health?
Definitely, actually. I mean, by really the late 60s, early 70s, the FDA was beginning to look into this. They convened an expert panel to see whether there could be some impact, whether, prescribing or sort of giving out these drugs in large amounts and low doses might actually lead to resistant bacteria. And they did find that. So we've known for quite some time that this is definitely a risk, and we know as well that antibiotic-resistant infections are becoming a bigger and bigger health problem for human beings. It's a matter in many ways just closing that loop, connecting those resistant bacteria arising from the farms and then getting to human beings.
And you point out that nearly every expert outside the FDA believes using antibiotics this way in animal feed and water is a threat to human health.
I think so, yeah. I mean, outside the industry and even within the FDA, they've talked about the need to do something about this. They've made some sort of slow moves towards actually beginning to kind of try to restrict that. But this is something the public health community is very concerned about, I think. And at the same time, it's something we're not doing a very good job here in the United States of actually trying to curb.
Well, how does it actually work in our bodies? We give it to the animal, I guess, to prevent illness, even though the animal is not sick. And then we eat the meat. And what happens to our bodies?
Well, it's not even so much that, it's if you could somehow get it from the meat itself. It's rather that, in those conditions, in the farms themselves, that's where the bacteria sort of rise. I mean, the way antibiotic resistance happens is that bacteria are incredibly adaptable. So if you throw a chemical at them soon enough or a long enough period of time, eventually they will develop resistance. They're very good at that. They've been doing that for a long time. And then once you get those resistant strains, they can jump the farm workers sometimes. They can even get carried away by insects or by rats, and then just kind of make their way up that chain to get into human beings. And it's simply sort of a matter of almost chance. And also, animal waste is a huge part of that, too. I mean, you can still have all that manure that's produced by a factory farm cannot be tainted with a resistant strain that can be in the water, that can get in human beings that way.
And there are certain high-risk antibiotics?
I mean, no. I mentioned penicillins and tetracyclines. I mean, these are basic antibiotics that are used for people, and they're exactly the ones you'd think we wouldn't want to be necessarily wasting on animals. Whatever you actually use an antibiotic, you are creating the risk that the bacteria will become resistant to it. It's almost like we have a gun with so many bullets. The question is, how are we going to spend it? And it's also becoming very difficult to develop new antibiotics. So we're kind of in a race against these bacteria. And the fact that we're using so many of these important drugs, essentially to help animals grow faster to reduce the price of meat, from a public health perspective, that doesn't seem like a very good idea.
Can you tell us about a new report by the Natural Resources Defense Council? Didn't they have to use Freedom of Information Act requests to get information from the FDA?
Absolutely, yes. I mean, it's basically what happened was that between 2001 and 2010, this is what NRDC found through the FOIA requests, FDA experts reviewed the safety of about 30 different antibiotic feed additives to see if they were threatening. And these are drugs that are being used for non-therapeutic uses, so growth promotion, disease prevention. And they found that of those 30, 18 posed a high risk to exposing human beings to antibiotic-resistant bacteria. And even the remainder, there simply wasn't enough data for experts to even know whether they produced or they really had that kind of risk. And yet, as NRDC has shown, the FDA has done nothing about this. These were drugs that were approved a long time ago. Maybe under new rules, if they were new drugs, they wouldn't be approved. But they're out there. They've been in use for a long time. And there's been really no steps taken to curb them anyway.
Well, why did the NRDC have to use FOIA requests? Shouldn't the FDA's records be openly available? Are they a difficult organization to get information from?
Well, I think any agency in the federal government, when it has things it doesn't really want to make public, can be difficult to get that information out of. And NRDC has been locked in some legal issues, legal lawsuits, really, with FDA over their failure to regulate antibiotics in food. So this has been a long-running event that's going back 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years. In many ways, FDA, it's an agency that is looking out for public health. But when you're dealing with the farming industry, when you're dealing with the meat industry and the farm industry, because, of course, both farmers and the drug industry benefit a lot from prescribing all of these antibiotics, it's a pretty powerful group to try to really control.
I'm talking to Time Magazine senior editor Brian Walsh. His recent article that we're discussing is new report says FDA allowed high-risk antibiotics to be used on farm animals. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. This past January 4th, the FDA called for farmers and ranchers to stop giving cephalosporins to animals in their feed. Why those drugs in particular?
I think those drugs in particular, again, are drugs that are used in human beings, and they're ones where you want to sort of preserve them as much as possible. They're trying to do this, I guess, in a kind of triage kind of way, find those antibiotics that really need to be kept for human beings and try to, as much as possible, keep those in use, keep those actually effective for people.
But didn't the FDA try to call for that change in 2008? That was a long time ago. Why has it taken so long? What happened then?
It's taken so long because the FDA just does not seem to want to take on these kind of industry, this sort of very powerful industry as much as anything else. The Obama administration came in, and certainly with the new FDA, they talked about trying to deal with this. They've talked a lot about the importance of dealing with this. But when it actually comes to doing something about it, when it actually comes to regulating it, they kind of fall short. And it's not as if this is impossible to do. The European Union has been restricting and regulating antibiotics in animals for a while now. The Netherlands, which is a major actual pork producing country, has greatly restricted the use of antibiotics, and they've found both a reduction in resistant strains, but they've also found that it hasn't really affected their industry that much. So it is possible to have both relatively healthy animals, a healthy, robust meat industry, and also try to, try to keep the control of those antibiotics for use in human beings.
Now, is the resistance coming from the agricultural industry or the pharmaceutical industry or both?
It's coming really from both. I mean, you're talking about in the agriculture industry, really one of the most powerful and I think influential industries in the U.S. I mean, you look at the Farm Belt, you look at a block in Congress that can belong to both parties that is pretty resistant to making any kind of changes. And then, of course, pharma is a huge industry, a lot of money there. And for them, this is, if suddenly you are no longer able to use antibiotics as a farmer for non-therapeutic uses, for growth promotion, for disease prevention, only for sick animals, only to be used by a veterinarian, well, you'd be using a lot fewer drugs, and that's going to reduce their sales.
Could this have been something included in the Farm Bill, or does that or is there no legislation that covers these things? Is it just the FDA that issues the guidelines?
It's the FDA that has a lot of control over this, and they certainly could do a lot more if they wanted to. And, of course, to be fair to them, if they were to put in stricter regulations, they'd be facing a lot of legal pushback, I think, from industry. It might take a long time for those actually to take hold. Now, there are acts in Congress. So there's a bill by actually Louise Slaughter, who's a member of Congress, who's actually a microbiologist, who's put out a law that would essentially, or a bill that would greatly reduce the amount of antibiotics used, again, for non-therapeutic uses. But that really hasn't gone anywhere for, I think, the reasons we were just talking about here.
Well, the FDA did revise some of its guidelines in 2003. What did it call for then? And was there political resistance at that time?
I think then it caused for trying to look at, try to look at new drugs to actually begin to take greater account into what impact they might have on antibiotic resistance. So when you're actually deciding, just as they would for human beings, should we allow this new drug for animals? Well, one of the things you'd have to take account for now is whether they will lead to antibiotic resistance. Of course, the problem is there are so many drugs that have already been approved well before that that are still in use, and you'd actually have to go in and restrict those drugs to really make much of a difference.
Apparently, the FDA found 26 of 30 antibiotic additives never even met the 1973 criteria.
Exactly. I mean, this goes back quite a long way, and really I think that report underscores just how little has been done about it. And even though FDA's own experts are looking at that data, when the data was available, it's not always available, and they're seeing that these drugs pose a real risk, a high risk in some cases, for resistance, ultimately nothing really happened. So the FDA has last year sort of put out what would be voluntary guidelines for drug makers to change the label of the drug so it supposedly could no longer be used for growth promotion. But that leaves a huge loophole because they could still be used for something called disease prevention. And really, if you're a farmer or a vet, growth promotion, disease prevention doesn't really make a huge difference. So it's hard to see how that's going to make much of an impact on reducing the amount of antibiotics we're using here.
Now, how do antibiotics promote growth? I understand how they promote, how they prevent disease.
Mm-hmm. It's actually not entirely understood why they do that. I mean, it seems to be something that very early on farmers noticed. They put on weight much faster, and if you're a rancher or a farmer, that's your number one concern. The faster you can get your animal to, I guess, market weight, the less you have to feed them, the sooner you can get them out, the sooner you can bring a new one in. But it's not really understood well. I mean, to me, antibiotics are sort of the reason why they're used so much in American farms, or really all industrial farms, is that these are not places that are conducive to animal health. This is not like the old McDonald farm. It's tough. It's crowded. It's just like flu season with people. And I think if you don't give them those kind of drugs, they will get sicker more often. So if you were to remove these as a non-therapeutic tool, you'd really have to rethink how you're making food as well.
So the farmers would have to go through a major change in the way they grow meat.
I think they'd have to go through a pretty significant change, definitely. I mean, there was actually a report coming out of Johns Hopkins just last year as well, and really looked at all the issues with industrial farming. And, there's obviously animal welfare. There's how workers are treated. There's issues of food safety. For them, the use of antibiotics and the resulting rise of antibiotic-resistant bacteria is by far the number one threat posed by the system. And it's also the one where they found the least has really been done since President Obama came into office.
Well, the FDA has recently released new guidelines that limit this practice, but it has more to do with asking manufacturers to change their labels?
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it says, if you change the labels, this is what the FDA is saying in response to these sort of allegations. Well, you know, you change the label, then if farmers then go and use them for growth promotion, then they'll be going off label. That will be illegal. And they've said, well, we'll actually, you know, actually prosecute that or we'll actually push that. But, you know, what people at NRDC and other public health experts are saying is that there's going to be a huge loophole in these new regulations because you'll still be able to use them for disease prevention. And really, it's not clear that's much of a difference, really, at the end of the day. And it's just hard to see how that will make any kind of difference in this kind of system.
And aren't they also voluntary changes? I know whenever people ask me to voluntarily change my bad behavior, it doesn't always have much of an impact.
Right. They are voluntary changes. And, you know, when you ask FDA about this, they say, well, making them voluntary means, you know, essentially we'll get less resistance from industry, which means they'll actually get on the books faster. But then you have to wonder, I mean, how valuable really how valuable is a voluntary rule at the end of the day?
But in the end, this does come down to public safety and public health. And I would think that it is the job of government to protect us, just as it tries to protect us from E. coli and other things that contaminate the food stuff that we eat. Now, why is the FDA so weak in this area?
Well, I think it's you know, an agency that's concerned about its power over the industry it's actually meant to regulate. I mean, we see that not just in this area, but in a lot of areas, you know, even with, you know, obviously President Obama talks a lot about this, but even with him in office, you still have, I think, a lot of agencies. You could look at the EPA, you could look at the USDA, you could look at the Department of Interior, that are reluctant to use, I think, the full powers of their office, you know, out of concern for whether the economic impact of those rules or just the pushback they'll get from Congress or they'll get from industry. And, you know, that's a huge problem. We you know, public health should be the number one goal for these sort of agencies, but in a practical level, it isn't always.
Have the pharmaceutical companies that manufacture these antibiotics been asked about whether they're concerned about their overuse?
They have, and they basically say, you know, the responsibility, I think, is not to them, the makers of the drugs, but to those who use them. There's a lot of, I guess you could say, buck passing here. You know, I mean, the farming lobby, the farming industry will say, well, the science doesn't clearly show that these strains can jump from farms to human beings, even though more and more we are seeing that studies that show that to be the case. But just, you know, just as you see again, whether it's climate change, whether it's other issues in environmental science, if you just create enough doubt, a powerful industry can really hold off regulation for quite a long time.
But aren't they being penny wise and pound foolish? Because if the bacteria become drug resistant, then their drugs become less effective, and that would mean loss of sales.
I think so. I mean, certainly on a sort of public level, they're being very, you know, penny-wise and pound foolish on that. I mean, this is a huge, huge public health concern. The fear, and this is something expressed by, you know, people at the CDC, at the World Health Organization, that if we see resistance continue to rise, we could go back to a pre-antibiotic era, you know, an era where basic infections, basic cuts, basic, illnesses could once again be deadly, things that we now take care of very easily. And that's pretty frightening.
Is there a limit to how many antibiotics you can develop? Or can we just keep on fine-tuning?
I mean, you can develop new antibiotics, but it's very expensive to do so. And, you know, there isn't necessarily a huge, right now at least, financial incentive to do so. For drug makers, there's a lot more lucrative areas to look into. And so we're not really keeping up with this. It's almost as if we're on a treadmill, bacteria getting more and more resistant to our weapons. And, you know, we're failing to develop new ones in time to really head them off.
Has the FDA responded to the NRDC's report?
They have. I mean, they haven't responded specifically to the allegations in the report, but basically what they say is, okay, well, we've made this new change at the end of the last year. We are taking antibiotic resistance in farm animals seriously. These changes will, you know, make a difference is their argument, you know, but they don't really go into the detail of, you know, what happened during that time period when its own experts were reviewing those 30 drugs.
It's my sense that in areas like this, politics winds up being more powerful than concerns about public health.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. I mean, politics and the money that go into politics, I think, has a much bigger impact, especially in the sort of short-term, immediate term, than this very long-term threat to public health that antibiotic resistance poses.
Do people who work in the FDA come from the agricultural, the pharmaceutical industry?
Some of them do, definitely. I mean, there's a lot of crossover, I think, in an agency like the FDA. With it, a lot of the time, actually, they'll be coming from the pharmaceutical industry, or they might go back to the pharmaceutical industry. See the same thing with the USDA, which plays a role here as well. So that's one more, I think, issue that kind of holds back really tough regulation.
Brian Walsh is a senior editor at Time Magazine. His recent article on this issue is new report says FDA allowed high-risk antibiotics to be used on farm animals. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.